Let me put my phone on do not disturb because my emails are going ballistic. Fucking Slipknot, I tell you.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Expressing your love can look many different ways. And with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 285 of Sapnin Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and tell me that reality is better than the dream. I found out the hard way, touring life isn't what it seems.
I don't know. You've come up. I thought there was going to be some sort of zookeeper references. Anyway, this week's guest is an unbelievable, brilliant, super interesting behind the scenes look with our good friend Simon Robinson, who is the production coordinator for a little known band called Slipknot.
Ooh.
Oh, indeed, Morgan. You're right to say, ooh. We caught up with Simon, who we've been friends with for quite some time, to talk everything Simon Robinson, from his time working and living inside Bristol Zoo. That's an episode in itself, really, isn't it? Just have a zookeeper on, just to like... But how he went from zookeeping to looking after the maggots in Slipknot.
It's a crazy turn of events in itself, that, but the machine of Slipknot's wild touring experience has just started back up again. They've just made headlines closing Sick New World Festival in Las Vegas and gone viral with photos emerging of the band playing a secret show out in the desert of all places with their throwback boiler suits, masks and all. Slipknot are one of those bands who have grown so incredibly massive that arguably one of the biggest musicians out there at the moment, and their stage production, crew, and general touring structure as its own dedicated entity away from just the nine masked maniacs playing wild metal. This is where Simon Robinson comes in. Simon has been the band's official production coordinator for the last 5 years, being on the road with them, making sure everything is up and running, everyone has what they need to do their job, and really just being a vital part of various roles behind the scenes in music for a long time.
Yeah, to get him to come on to have a chat was absolutely amazing, and yeah, to learn about how fucking Slipknot functions was super fucking interesting. Like, how many crew have they got? The answer is, fucking Lord, that's mad.
We're going to get an insight into all that stuff and his work with other bands like Bring Me the Horizon, Skin Dread and Busted, backstage ongoings, unique job responsibilities, mad gifts that they've had to check before giving to the band, rider requests, and most importantly, how they get their beer kegs. I know we all really want to know this.
If that's not your number one Slipknot question.
Oh, of course. That's what we're here.
What are you asking? Where do they get a keg? Are they designed? Are they specifically musical kegs? Do they have to ring a certain note? Like, it's... Surely, that's the first question everyone goes to, isn't it? Anyway, yes, this was a fantastic chat with Simon. Thanks again to Simon for coming on. Perhaps we can get him on in the future. after this next Slipknot touring cycle to give us a catch up on what's new and what's going on.
We'll see. We'll see. Teases a lot of stuff in this conversation as well. But before we get into it, a shout out to Pins and Knuckles merchandise,
yes,
who we're teaming up with for the month of May to try and highlight more roles like this in music that are critically underappreciated. We're trying to add some stuff to the podcast all throughout the month because Pins and Knuckles are just really built on their community aspect. It's really important for them to show that the scene needs to stick together with things like this and highlight different things. A merch company designed by musicians for musicians. And you can go and check out more things like this. And all your merch needs are pinsandknucklesmerch.com. If you like what we do as a podcast and you want to support us, go and check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/sapnin. You get included into our wonderful community of people who we absolutely adore and help continue to make this happen each and every week. But let's get straight in to the chaos of Slipknot with Mr. Simon Robinson on episode 285 of Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Slipknot in it! No, it doesn't work, does it? Never mind.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sapnin! Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Yes! Joining us this week, Simon Robinson. Let me tell you about Simon. Simon once made my mother's dreams come absolutely true. Because when I met Simon years ago, he was working Bristol Zoo, which is sadly now closed down. Simon got in touch with me and said, if you'd like a behind-the-scenes look at Bristol Zoo, come down and give me and my mother a tour. And she still talks about those capuchin monkeys to this day. And nowadays, look at that for a step. Zoo keeper to rounding up the animals in Slipknot.
Hey. As
production coordinator. Yes, Simon, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. What an introduction. I mean, like, that can't really beat that, can you?
Well, I guess the first question is, are the parallels between Slipknot and Bristol Zoo?
I mean, it's they're very similar jobs. Obviously, what one half can talk back to you, and the other half can't. But general cleaning up after the chaos. But no, it's all good, all good.
Yeah, a lot of keeping Sid in a cage away from everybody else.
Ah, oh, Sid's a sweetheart.
He's going to jump on someone now any second. Cage him up. But yeah. How have you been? What's news? What have you been up to lately?
I've been good, thanks. Slipknot of just the machine is rumbling and starting up again. Last week we had a couple of shows, a very secret show in the desert in Joshua Tree, a venue called Pappy and Harriet's, which is it's essentially a bar and barbecue restaurant, and obviously an act like Slipknot is quite large for the venue. It was an outside stage. They do have, it's a historical venue where they have certain acts that come. Paul McCartney, Foo Fighters, they've done it before. But obviously there's not nine people in those bands, and the stage was a little bit small. So our production manager worked really hard and had it all advanced. They had a little extension put onto the stage. We turned up with two trucks of gear, and all the locals were kind of, what?
Yeah, where's that gonna go?
But it was honestly great. It was chaos in a controlled form, if that makes sense. Mm. Basically, you know, the venue is so small that the band, they had a hotel down the road, which they rented out for dressing rooms and stuff, because it was literally one backstage room at this venue, which obviously won't fit everybody. They rolled, the intro started, they walked straight on stage from the vehicles, played the gig, destroyed the place, and then got back in the vehicles and shot back off. It was, you know, wham, bam, thank you, man, but that was great. And then 2 days later, we had Sick New World Festival in Las Vegas, which... was another controlled scale of chaos, but just on a larger scale, you know. It was really good. And then we, bit of downtime back home in the UK now, and then next week we go out to Daytona, Florida for Welcome to Rockville, and then a few days later it's Sonic Temple.
And wow.
And touring continues throughout the year, so.
Nice, yeah. All systems go, we're coming straight back up.
I know, right? It's pretty chaotic. I'm also doing some rep gigs for Live Nation when I'm at home, just to keep the bills being paid and keep my foot in the door, and you know how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what a mad week on both sides of that spectrum, though. Getting everything ready for a desert and then a massive festival in the States that, you know, a headline set that everyone's so excited for. I mean... Yeah, if you could, I mean, just to start, for people who don't know, could you explain your job role with Slipknot and what a kind of day-to-day, a tour, and just everything looks like for you?
Yeah, sure. So my main role as a production coordinator is working really closely with the production manager, Rob Highcroft, booking travel for crew, whether it's flights, ground transport, hotels... basically getting that skeleton, the core bit in, locked in, and then looking at logistics. So on the days, whether it's using runners, rented vehicles to move about. Before this last week, we were in Las Vegas rehearsing. So we had four or five days in the studio. So it's then basically making sure everyone can get from hotel to studio, studio to hotel while we're there. If anyone needs some supplies, you know, that I'm the go-to person. They'll come to me, tell me they need some spray paint, some new, you know, some bits and pieces, a guitar pedal here and there. So kind of my desk is the go-to point. And then obviously sorting out the food and stuff. And then once the A party is on site, band and their entourage, I'm a contact with them, work closely with the tour manager just to make sure that everyone's comfortable. They've got what they need. Obviously in a rehearsal, it's a bit more of a relaxed environment than a show, but it's still being nine people in a band. You've got a big entourage with them to make sure that they have what they need. So it's a lot of this hand talking to that hand, making sure that there's no issues and things are there before they're, you know, requested, essentially, to make it nice and smooth all around.
Nice. Have you ever had any weird requests? Have you ever had, like, Jim texting you 3 o'clock in the morning asking for a teddy bear? Or I don't
know. Not so much. There's in the tour party, because, you know, it's a very we're all very one big family, but it's also quite separate when we're out on the road. So the A party are at their hotel with their assistants, their needs and stuff. The crew party are in their separate hotel. So we do obviously, yeah, converse and interact, but it's a bit separate. So if there's anything late at night, thankfully my phone's not going off for that from an A party nice. Side of things. But if help is needed, then they know I'm there. Once had to get some like TV dinners for and a little the tray with the beanbag underneath so that people could sit and watch TV on the bus comfortably. No real craziness. Obviously, everyone knows that, yeah, Slipknot back in the day was a bit of a I don't even know how to say it, extreme, shall we say. It's a lot different now, obviously, you know, people are older, everyone's a bit more relaxed. It's still, as you can see from the live shows, it's very much a chaotic thing. But yeah, as behind the scenes goes, unfortunately, there's not that those crazy stories that everyone's after and whatever. Simon, it is. I know. Sorry. Should we stop the podcast there?
Look, what we'll do is we'll cut all that bit out, right? Just say something mad like, oh yeah, Corey needs Raven's blood. We need something mad.
Yes, disposing of the, you know, all the dead crows in jars that end up outside the door and all that.
Yeah, that's it. Perfect. There you go. That will be a seamless cut there. No, but that's awesome. So how many people are in the whole crew? Like how many?
So it obviously depends on the type of show that we do. So at the minute, it's as you have seen from the photos and the videos of Sick New World, it's a not, when I say stripped back show, I don't mean obviously not much is put into it. Obviously, it's completely chaotic and so much going on. And Rob, PM, I don't know how he does it with the amount of things that he's asked for and changes and stuff, but right now, we're currently looking at about 25 crew for the small show as it is. Yeah. That's no video, no pyrotechnics. That's basically audio team, backline team, production team. There's some set carps in there as well. Just kind of, that's the basic skeleton crew. But for example, like, so when the tour in the UK happens at the end of this year, there's going to be video. There'll most likely be pyro. Extra bits and pieces come in. You have caterers. You have everything else. So you kind of be looking at between 40 and 50 for the crew.
Wow.
And then at any one time, the A party, you know, 25 to 30 people. So that's not including truck drivers, bus drivers, support. So, you know, the biggest you're looking at is around 80, 85 people, which is a lot of people to take care of, obviously.
Yeah,
definitely.
That's insane. But that's the thing. I think a lot of people don't realize that side of the industry, especially when you get to a band the level of Slipknot. I mean, you know, I think there's still a conception of some bands. It's just like the four of them. Maybe they've got one guy who's the tour manager, a driver, merch guy and sound guy all in one.
Of course, yeah. And obviously you see it a lot at the minute where ticket prices are obviously quite high and there's a lot of, yeah, divisive conversation about that. But when you look at it on that kind of things with there's that many people to house, you know, hotels, flights, food, transport, the logistics of putting the show on, etc., it kind of gives a better understanding to people who don't have that behind the scenes knowledge of, okay, yes, ticket prices have gone up a bit, but also there's a kind of reason why it's that, you know, I'm sure everyone would love to be able to make it like a super affordable stuff and whatever, but it's, everyone has to be taken care of at the end of the day.
Yeah. I think a lot of people now probably think like, oh, V-Man must set the pyro up. Like, well, no, there's, you've got, like, it's dangerous. It's mad. Yeah. And it's crazy.
I still to this day don't know why they let V-Man put some flames on his bass guitar, but you know, there we go.
I did. Yeah. I saw that video and I was like, oh, someone's going to die. This is going to be awful. No, don't do that.
Yeah. Check how far down the set list we are and make sure I'm sat in the office at that point.
But yeah, the production with Slipknot is always on point. Like, it's been fucking brilliant since almost day one.
I mean, I remember going to see them back in the day. Yeah, where was it? Might have been London Docklands. We're talking a long time ago. When they recorded the DVD, yeah. Put my age out here. But it was always ridiculous. You always remember the giant percussion risers on like hydraulics going up and down, and Sid and Clown bouncing all over the place. And it's still got that same kind of vibe to the show. But it's obviously in a different way. I know moving forwards, there's a lot of talk about really mixing it up, and with the 25th anniversary of the self-titled record this year and stuff. Obviously, everyone's seen the old school red boiler suits back. There's some masks that look very old school. It's really exciting, and there's a lot of fun stuff in store.
Well, it did feel like, from seeing those videos and those pictures or whatever, it does feel like there's like a new energy, maybe. Like, I know having a new drummer and stuff will bring a slightly different vibe or whatever, but it seems...
Yeah, obviously the drummer is with whatever band is that integral part. So I think with a change there, there's obviously a new vibe, a new, like you said, it's each musician brings a different aspect. Whether, I guess it would be similar if a band changed a singer or a guitarist or whatever. It all has different components linking in. But I think just the whole, when you see the advertising and you see Corey back with his dreads and that kind of, everyone is buzzing. I know, you know, when we were in rehearsals and the wardrobe lady took all the masks out and everything, everyone was kind of like, oh, okay, here we go. it's on. So, no, it's great. And everyone knows how like frantic and full of energy that record is. And obviously over time, things change, different records, the pace goes down, the pace goes up. But to have that, I think everyone's just absolutely buzzing for it. So, I mean, the crowd in Las Vegas and Pappy and Harris as well went off. So I guess that's a sign of things to come.
Yes. Well,
you said there about there's already whispers of changing up the production, but with Slipknot, the production is always out of hand, really, because it's not a band where it's just, oh, they got cool lighting and they're doing the thing. You've got so many things going on within the stage, whether it be kind of like the risers, the pyro, like bins, like there's all sorts you've got to incorporate. How far in advance do you have to prepare for these things in terms of like dynamics and planning and making sure they're available? Like, obviously, it's not just getting to the venue, plug in the guitar. You've got millions of other things that the team kind of need to sort way in advance, I imagine.
I mean, like I said before, Rob, the PM, has a great working relationship with the artists and the management. And Clown is the artistic drive. He's very heavily involved with the look, the overall outcome of the show, how they want it and stuff. And I know they have, you know, in-depth conversations of what they want. You know, obviously you can put something down on paper and it doesn't necessarily work, but it's talks have been going on for a long while. And, you know, last year the conversation started, I know, because like you said, it's not something that you can just go, oh, you know, we want to set the whole place on fire and it'll be absolutely fine, we'll do that in a day. it's you know, from what we had when I first started with them in 2019, it's kept the same, but there's been different elements. So like extra beer kegs were added, like there was more pyro, different pyro, more video screens, you know, started with a backdrop that went away in favor of the video screens. And it was subtle changes for someone going to the show. If they saw them, you know, 8 months apart, they go, oh, that looks a little bit different, but not enough to be like, this is completely changed, but it's subtle enough that there's bits and pieces around. It's a massive beast, obviously, but I think from what everyone sees, it's always a show. And even when, so like at Sick New World, there wasn't there wasn't the usual bangs and fire and explosions that people expect. However, the show was as electric, if not more so than usual, because it's just, in my opinion, it allows people to focus a bit more on the music and what's going on with those crazy nine folks running around on stage with metal pipes and baseball bats and all sorts. But no, it's great. Really good.
Yeah, I've got written down beer. Who supplies the beer kegs?
The first rehearsals I ever did with Slipknot in 2019, we were based in the UK because it was before a European tour, and we were out of beer kegs. So we rang around pubs, all sorts of places, basically saying, do you have any beer kegs that we... Obviously, they don't need to be in working order and they're going to get absolutely beat to shit. But we have various supplies, and obviously with gear storage here and there, there's various shipping containers around the world which are full of beer kegs.
imagine finding one of those. You open up one of those one day, one of those big fucking containers, and you're like, oh, you got like. What was that? Like storage walls. Fucking hell, we found a container that's got a Slipknot S. We fucking go. We've got all the old outfits. We're about to be millionaires, Rodney. And then all of a sudden you open it up full of fucking dented kegs.
Yeah, imagine that.
Broken hearted.
That is funny. After the pandemic, when we went back out, so August of 2021, you're talking about a storage unit. It was still at a time where UK citizens couldn't fly directly from UK to the US because the US was still, there were such high cases of COVID in the UK that they were like, no one's allowed to travel. So quite a lot of the crew are UK based. So we had to get a special dispensation to allow us to travel. And we went over for a bit of rehearsals, then a show, then we had a little break in between. And because of the dispensation, we couldn't travel to and from the UK in the middle of a gap where sometimes we would. So we stayed in Des Moines. And one of the things we did there was clean out an old storage unit of Slipknot's, which had multiple battered kegs. It had the old, in the back, it had the old drum riser that Joey used to use that flipped up and spun around. It had just rails of boiler suits, masks, stage coolers, everything in there. And it was like you said, opening up that door and being like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like a museum, essentially. And obviously, when we do the Knotfest Roadshow, the tour, mainly in the US, a museum comes out on the road with us. So there is like it's basically a truck that the sides pop down and everything, and people have a ticket where they can go through, and there's all the old masks, like basically like walking through time zones, and they can play the players' guitars. There's a snare there that they can hit, that kind of vibe. So it's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah. I was going to say, like, what happens with the stuff they don't want or they don't want to put in the museum? Does it just go back in a container or do they sell it?
There's a number of storage units around that literally are just full of Slipknot paraphernalia that, it's crazy. And like walking in and seeing it being like, right, we've got a couple of days to make this so you know where everything is. It's just, years of touring where people have just gone, oh, we'll just store that in there for a minute and then it'll all come back nice. It's interesting, that's for sure.
Do you own a boiler suit? Have you...
Not me myself, unfortunately. It might be fun. I've always looked at him kind of we need a body double for a minute, but they're all trim and I'm just suffering with eating too much US food.
But you say you've been with the team now for 5 years and there's a lot of UK based people working together. Like how did you first get the gig and how did that come about?
So I was, as I mentioned before, Rob Highcroft is the PM. He's UK based as well. And we met some years ago now when we were, Both covering as last minute fill-ins for a little pop artist called Bars and Melody.
I know, yeah.
I know, like Bars and Melody, Slipknot.
Slipknot. Same thing. Yeah.
Easy, I know, right? Easy. Yeah. And we met on that, kept in touch, and then Rob's got such a high caliber quality of clients that he works with, and we kind of, there'd be spots where, yeah, he'd reach out for me to me to see if I could assist with a few shows I'd depping out. So I helped him on a couple of shows with Busted. And then we both worked together on At the Drive-In in 2017, I believe, maybe, when they came, not the first time they came back around, but when they did the record that they released, we both worked on that. And when we hopped off that, we kind of went our separate ways, did some bits and pieces, and then Rob started back up with Bring Me the Horizon, the cycle on the record Ammo. When that started, he reached out to me to see if I was available, and I started working with him on that. And then he got the call from Slipknot, and essentially I went over there with him and he started as his coordinator, and it kind of went from there, really. It was the first, he took it on quite late into the planning of the cycle, and threw it together to start that first tour. And I'd obviously worked with Bring Me, with At the Drive-In. They're a very high quality, they're a very high, well-known artist. And obviously Slipknot is, it's just a step up. It's another level. I think arguably the genre of music that they played, they are the top. Obviously there's, Metallica, there's stuff, but they're more of a hard rock, I'd say. I don't know. It's not that same. So Slipknot is kind of at the top, and I don't think anything, I don't even know if I could, but I don't think anything prepared me for that jump and that level of, I was a Slipknot fan since when I was growing up and stuff. And obviously I knew what came with it, but it was just the whole, oh my, this is another level. And that first tour, which, we had a couple of weeks in the rehearsal studio in the UK, mostly without the band. It was putting the set together, all that kind of stuff, meeting all the other folk. And then we went into it. Our first show was in Finland at a festival, and it was a blur. It was some of the the hardest touring that I've ever done, but it was also so rewarding. And I look back at it now and think there were times when I was sat in hotel rooms going, oh, what have I let myself in for here? This is insane, but fantastic as well. Like it's been a journey. I learn every day. There's never the same day. There's so much moving, there's so many different parts. I always strive to improve with what I do to make sure that the client gets what they want and what they need, and like everyone gets the best day possible. So it's that was how we got into it, and it's just this beast that's rolled on ever since.
What were the main step ups? What were the main differences between someone like At the Drive-In and then? Is it because the production and the machine?
I think going from everything that I'd done previously was very much like a, with the exception of Bring Me, that gave me the closest insight into what Slipknot was to what I'd done before. But everything else that I'd done before was very much like one tour bus, band and crew on the same bus, same hotels, like not the level of planning is key with this one, like the coordination and shows for this. We're touching base, weeks, maybe even months in advance for shows, because you can't just go, that will be all right on the day, when you've got that much integral moving parts. You have to make sure that it's to the letter. Things change, especially when you have 80 plus people in the crew. You can't just go, oh, this will be how it is. It was that kind of, right, you need to be looking at hotels this far in advance because the party's so big that you need to be able to lock it in. Once shows start getting announced, hotels disappear. So, you know, for example, we're looking at, currently looking at hotels for December for the UK Europe run. Now the travel agents reaching out to everyone and stuff. It's just planning, meticulous planning. The amount of spreadsheets I've got is ridiculous. You know, it's just that. Learning everyone as well, being able to go, oh, I need to get a flight for Bob. His home airport's this. That kind of vibe of just thinking, being able to work on the go is essential for this. You can't just sit back and relax and hope it's all right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, what would you say is parts of the job that maybe you didn't expect when you first got into it, or when you tell people what you do, that they just don't understand that? This is the actual job.
I don't know. It's just I think people expect it to be your green M&Ms only, your kind of everything in black satin, in drape and whatever. And, you know, people have, they have their routines. They know what they like. They know the brands they like. I think it's just more people expect it to be ridiculous and crazy and like, oh, you've got a show in Costa Rica. You're going to have a fantastic time. People don't realize that it's literally house to airport, land, get in a van, go to the hotel, wake up the next day, do a site visit, come back, make sure everything's good, go to bed super early. So when that 5 o'clock alarm goes off, you're ready and on it. If people start hitting you from the minute they see you, oh, what's the deal with this? When are we going to, what's this? You need to play, you need to be able to plan to have those answers or make it so that people don't have to ask, you know, so the information is there for them. There's an app that we use, Master Tour, that you can literally put everything in so people know where the hotel is, what the Wi-Fi password is, what time they're traveling, that kind of thing. I think that the intensity of it was what I didn't expect, but I didn't appreciate at the start. But now, obviously, like I said, it's still different every day. I'm still learning, but I have a much better handle on it to be able to deal with it without me just sitting in a puddle, you know, the meme with the dog with the house on fire. Everything's fine. Yeah. that first like tour, I was just like, what's my name again?
Yeah. What time? You said 5 a.m. Like, is it like a show day? What time do you get up? What time do you go to bed? Because I'm sure, like, setting up as well, that's a whole, like, that must take hours and hours and hours to get in the venue and make sure everyone is doing their job. And then the show happens and then pack it all back up.
Of course, it all depends on the situation, the show type. So for example, Sick New World, which we just did, we were in Vegas already the day before it's only a 1 day festival for those that don't know. So the day before we loaded in, so we had that luxury of having the day to be able to set everything up, you know, sort it all out. The set gets built, the audio team come in, do their thing, the backline team come in, do their thing. Everyone's there working together to get it done, because then it's not so much of a show date. Because obviously 99 times out of 100, a festival show, Slipknot will be the last band on the stage. They'll be headlining the stage. So then, you, whenever possible, it's always better to come in the day before, because then you can set up, the set is there in place, and then everyone else works around. If you're setting up the main stage, it's not a quick 2 hour, you know, couple of Pelly cases, pop, pop, pop. There's a lot of things, you know, there's five or six trucks plus all the rest of the GARMs. You can't really do that while bands are playing on the stage. Obviously, stuff still happens, but the main integral skeleton of the set, that, you know, the tiered steppage that everyone sees, that gets done whenever possible the day before. If we're on a tour, so if it's a tour where we're in arenas or something and we're doing back-to-back shows, see, we're on the buses, you'll get, you usually tend to be up around 5:30, 6 o'clock, go in to do what's called the walk and chalk. So you'll go in and all the rigging positions will be marked on the floor so that the rigging team can look up with the locals. Everything gets put in the air. Trucks will start tipping 7 a.m., something like that. Do the show, finish. By the time you've shows down, everything's packed up. The production team are first ones in and last one out. So you're looking at probably on a good day, on an average, like 10:30, 10:45 show finish. You'll be out the venue into the bus by 2 a.m. and then do it all again the next day. It's pretty savage. But yeah. there's no other way around it. If we're in certain places, like festival season in particular, where the festivals are going on late, there'll be an advanced team sent sometimes. So like the head rigging person and a couple of set cups may go the day before. We did that last year with Hellfest and some other ones where you'll send a core team in the day before so they can at least start, because you're coming in so hot with all these, yeah, straight off the back of where Grass Pop or Download or Greenfield, wherever that specific weekend is. So everyone, as much head start as you can get, the better, really. So it's definitely not. And then when people are like, oh, you got a day off in Prague or whatever, you're like, yeah, I saw my hotel room. I had slept. I caught up on sleep. I did paperwork. I did receipts. I might go out for an early dinner at 5 o'clock to then be back at the hotel by 8, 9 o'clock in bed. Yeah, or it doesn't always work like that, but that's the best laid plans.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, you get to see the Deliveroo options in Prague. That's
yeah. Oh, yeah. Ridiculous. My Deliveroo bill through the roof.
Well, yeah, I'd like to touch on how you kind of went from Bristol Zoo to getting into the music industry, if that's all right, if you could.
So I, obviously, as you said before, it was Bristol Zoo. I grew up in Bristol, hometown. I was always really heavily involved, like into music from an early age. Embarrassing to say, Slipknot posters all over my wall, that kind of stuff. My mum loves to tell them when she's come out and to the shows and whatever. Oh, Simon used to have this and this.
Shut up, Mum.
Yeah. But so I was always doing it. And like, I worked at the zoo, started in the zoo 2003. I did like a college courses before that in animal care and stuff. And I was always, you know, going to gigs in Bristol Academy, the Anson Rooms, the CIA, all that. That was, you know, TJs,
yeah,
all of the sweaty old grubby pubs, the Croft, everything. I used to love it. Whenever something came through, we'd all go as pals. And then obviously as the zoo career went on and on, I was still doing music stuff. And I got introduced to staff at the Thekla in Bristol, which is the fantastic venue there, really great place. And I started doing like crew shifts there. So I'd come in, you know, bit of cash to load in some bands down those horrendous stairs at the back, load them in, load them out, disco loadouts, all that kind of stuff. And it kind of got me meeting people. And part of that was meeting the guys in Skindred and Luke Bell, their TM at the time, who we still speak on the regular now.
I love me Luke Bell. I love me some Luke
fantastic
Bell.
Fantastic, innit? I think he's currently out with Drake at the minute.
Is he?
No.
How times change, yeah?
Fucking he was out
with
Chili's. Hell.
He was out with Chili's for ages, obviously. And then just going off tangents, like, it all changed because I got a text message from Luke being like, I'm with these guys. They say they know you. And I'm like, oh dear, what's happening here? Uh-oh. It was the Slipknot security team who we have. We're working on Drake as well. And I was like, what are you sharing an office with them for? Like, he's like, oh, we're doing this for a minute. So I was like, wow, okay. So yeah, how times have changed. But anyway.
Wow. I'm going to have to fucking text Luke Bell after this now. Now I know he's fucking working with Drake. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
So, got to know those guys, and I went from basically crewing in the Fekla, doing some bits, meeting some touring people, then obviously exchanging contacts, getting hit up. Oh, we're coming back to the UK, you around to help out. But the main thing was the guys in Skindred, you know, they gave have to be so grateful to them because they gave me the opportunity to start in music. And I was still working at the zoo, and I was getting a little bit like time for a change, you know, because I loved the zoo life. It was great. It was just, it's a job that you do for the passion. You definitely don't do it for the money. It's not a thing like that. And it was just getting a little bit like, you know, itchy feet, trying to look somewhere else. And started, you know, chatting with the guys in Skin Dread, Dan in particular, bass player Dan Pugsley, because he's Bristol based. And it kind of went from there, and it was, you know, phone call, hey, do you want to come out and do merch for us? Took a bit of holiday from the zoo, did that first tour, UK tour with Skin Dread, and then basically went from there. And I got to a point where I was like, you know what, I'm going to give this a go. And when was that? 2012. I was finalizing bits and pieces for it, and I was living in zoo property at the time, so it was kind of like relatively easy. I could just come out of the zoo property and moved in with my dad, and took the jump. And first of all, it was like, oh shit, have I done the right thing here? Because obviously starting off and knowing one essential artist, if they're not touring, I've got nothing. So it was like, oh no. It was that first year, I was kind of like, what have I done here? And it was, I'd be out on a tour, and I'd be, while I'm working that tour, I'd be looking for the next one, trying to be like, help me out here, because as anyone, I'll do merch, I'll assist, I'll do anything. And it basically, you know, it started with Skin Dread on merch duties. And then, you know, they toured with artists like Soil, Head PE, American Headshot, or they all kind of merged into one. And kind of then their agent would like link me with those artists. And when they came over, because obviously bands coming over for that size venue and stuff, they try and keep the cost down. They don't necessarily bring merch people over with them. So it started there. And then Skin Dread was my main thing. So I kind of, everything else work-wise was planned around that. And I went from, you know, merch assistant, started TMing those guys, and on and off did bits with them, but that was my main thing. And then there were various other artists, Devil Driver, Hoobastank, POD, all that kind of time and that genre of band. And I did that, and then it started, you know, stuff started rolling on, and it went from there, really. And I never looked back. Obviously I miss the animal side of things from the zoo. You can't say you don't. I was so lucky to work with animals that most people only see on the telly, whether it's gorillas, lions, hippos, that kind of thing. But I still get my fix. My wife works at a zoo. Nice. And so I pop in for a visit and go feed the giraffes and, you know, that kind of thing. So I still got that little, oh yeah, I'll go. And I still, to this day, you know, people obviously, the Slipknot camp know my wife and all that. So every now and again, you'll get a request, oh, when we're in the UK, can we go visit? yeah, sure. We'll sort it out. And,
Slipknot in a zoo, like, yeah, that's, know, awesome. Right? Slipknot, yeah, we'll paying to see other, fucking ant. Yeah, it's just mad. Yeah. Imagine a day around the zoo. Well, you've done it. I was about to say, imagine a day around the zoo. Because, yeah, the blackout did it. We did a day around the zoo with the blackout, which ended in fucking, obviously, Snoz breaking his collarbone like a twat. But, yeah, I'd fucking love her. I see why we did it now. I see why we did it and people bought it.
Maybe there's a business opportunity there. I should look into this, shouldn't we? Let's talk after. We'll get something sorted.
Trips with a knot. Trip knot! Fucking, cancel this podcast.
Copyright
is never going away.
Yeah. Copyright fucking, that now.
I'm writing emails this, right. Shut up, you two. I've got to do this now. I've got to touch on, you said you lived in zoo accommodation.
Mm.
That to me sounds like living in Jumanji. What?
So obviously, the nature of zoo business, it's, there's obviously working hours, but you know, an animal can't time a birth or being sick or whatever. Like, you know, if it's not very well, people don't just go, well, I'm going home, hopefully everything's all good at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's pretty much all animal collections, zoos, safari parks will have some form of accommodation, because it's not like there's one in each city or somewhere, or it's, you know, just down the road. People will move internationally as well. So at Bristol, when Bristol was at the site it is now, it was, so Bristol Zoo as it's such, there is another Bristol Zoo, but it's about 10 minutes out of the city. So even though the site that everyone knew as Bristol Zoo is closed, there's still a big site there, which is really good. It was in Clifton, which is a very, very expensive part of Bristol. So people couldn't afford to, yeah, be like, oh yeah, I live just around the corner. So they had an apartment building which had 7 or 8 apartments in it, all zoo staff. There was one property on site in the grounds, which was the last one I lived in. And it basically allows people, if you've got to go in and check on an animal at 1 o'clock in the morning, rather than have someone drive half an hour to get there, you've got people on site. You've got the emergency team with the, what we called the night round phone, which was linked to any alarms or anything like that, just to check up on stuff. So yeah, I lived there. You know, it's also, if there's any animals that need to be taken home to be looked after, if they're young or anything, baby sloth, that kind of thing. Sat in an incubator in your bedroom. Yeah, it was.
Wow.
What a time to be alive, eh?
Yeah, that's fucking mad. Yeah. We are seeing, right, you've had 2 separate jobs, right, which both blow my fucking mind, right, when you listen to the details, in 2 completely separate worlds. It's just mad.
When I first left the zoo, some of the artists that I were working for were like, why would you stop doing that? That's amazing. That's absolutely incredible. And then when you tell, like, I still keep in touch with a lot of my, you know, zoo, my old colleagues, zoo friends, and they're like, oh, your job's amazing. Like, wow, what's going on? And it's just like, kind of, okay, cool. Like, very meet in the middle kind of vibe.
Animals and bands.
We could make some sort of artist mix out of that.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah. Well, when you said the boss didn't want to go to the zoo, I was just picturing them in the boiler suits walking around. Like, that's just...
I mean, that might be a little bit true. Obviously, with the guys, there's the offstage Slipknot and the onstage Slipknot, which are 2 very different beasts to a certain extent. There's still like craziness, but it's, you know, it's the calm before the storm, if you like. Once those suits are zipped up, it's a different atmosphere, very electric atmosphere.
Do they ever rehearse in full costume?
Not so much like a dress rehearsal, if you like. So when, obviously, if there's a new member that comes in, it's very different, I assume, to what they're used to playing as in stage clothes compared to stage boiler suits, you like. So the recent new drummer coming in, playing for him, playing in a big overalls, because they're thick, they're like work, they're work gear basically. So it's very different, especially for the more energetic members who are throwing themselves about or battering a drum kit. It must take time to get used to it. So the last thing you want to do is the first time you wear it and be physical in it is at your first show. That's going to really cause issues, I imagine. So there were, you know, a couple of days before these last 2 shows where it was all donned, and obviously the new masks, the new suits, there's always the photo shoots that come in. So they are strolling around, and yeah, it took a while to get used to, especially with those that there's a bit of makeup on underneath around the eyes, yeah, and whatever, you know, you're walking around and there's a couple of panda faces in boiler suits. You know, but no, it's a hectic backstage, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mad. Yeah. I'm sure there's so many elements going on. It's hard to keep up as well.
It's you have a mental tick sheet in your head about, right, band will be on site in an hour. Let's make sure that all this is in place. This is ready. The Alexandria, who looks after the guy's wardrobe, she obviously has her hands actually full of clothes, shoes, masks, all of that. So she has her routine as well, very, very set in what the guys need to make sure they're prepared for stage and stuff. So there's a lot going on, that's for sure.
Mild, yeah.
Just
when the band have like a big milestone in terms of like a big tour or selling everything out straight away, is there ever like gifts or memorabilia or anything like that you guys are able to take with you? Is there a lot of like crossover between everyone?
So for example, like certain venues, it's quite common in the US if you've got a sold out show, the venue likes to, or sometimes they'll present the artist with a plaque or a trophy or something, which has the show date, congratulations on the sold out show, that kind of thing. We've got engraved wood pieces like with the band's logo and stuff. We've had that. Hockey pucks is a cool one. We have we do, obviously, the size you do the kind of NHL arenas in mm-hmm. the US. So I've got I'm a big hockey fan. So I have there's a Seattle Kraken one, which has the logo of the team on one side, and you flip it over and it's got the band photo with the date and
wow,
show, nice. Which is cool. We did do a show in Nashville at the Bridgestone Arena, which is the hockey venue there. And the band were presented with a snake. it was in one of the like taxidermy snakes in the big bowls that you see at like tattoo conventions and stuff. Obviously deceased, not with us, but it was sat in that. And it was a kind of a, who wants to take that home then? but the worst thing was it was big. It was, we're talking like a big fishbowl size, but the lid wasn't attached. So it was kind of like, okay. And one of the members lived locally, so they took that home with them, which was a lot easier than shipping it around in our stuff, because last thing I bloody want is loading in the next day and having bits of snake everywhere. every now and again there'll be something brought into the office. This has been given to us by a fan to give to the band. And obviously, security reasons and whatever, it all has to be vetted and stuff. You don't know who's sending what, or there will always be people as well that will send stuff. Oh, please, can you sign this? And there's a stamped envelope in it. Most of the time it's eBay, eBay sellers that send that kind of stuff, but it will all get passed on, and the band choose whether they take it, whether it gets with the souvenirs and stuff, what happens with it. But there is a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Has there ever been anything which is being a bit weird or being a bit like, we're not giving that to them?
Not so much. There's a lot of personal letters that will come in.
Yeah.
People wanting to let the artist know what Slipknot means to them, or not just Slipknot, with other artists I've done as well. Bars and Melody that we mentioned before, we used to have boxes and boxes of toys, and one of the guys in the band said he liked Nutella, so we used to get jars of Nutella for ridiculous.
Wow.
I like Nutella. Hey guys, I like Nutella.
Come on, mate, you can definitely do a bit better than Nutella. Like,
oh, you'd be surprised.
I can't. Dom,
please, I love Nutella. Anything.
But anything that we get that is okay to send back, obviously gets sent to whatever artist it is, and they do with it as they wish. But it's another thing to keep me busy.
Yeah, we're constantly busy, constantly busy.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
As we start to wind down on the conversation a little bit now, I mean, you have mentioned so many wild experiences and just being in these situations where it's a little bit mind-boggling that you're in. Has there ever been one of those where you've had to like take a second to be like, that's insane that like I'm here now doing this, or something that's really hit home, or being a bit more sentimental to you?
I think it is incredibly tough sometimes and grueling, and you know, it's not a schedule for the faint-hearted. It's a constant. When we're out on the road, it's stressful. You know, there's no way about it. Lack of sleep, crap diet, you know, missing home. You always take a minute and you think, I'm however many times I've gone, fucking hell, this is extreme. This is, I will never take it for granted. I know that, yeah, I've worked hard to get to where I am, but also I'm in a very privileged position with the role that I have. There are times when I'm, like I said, I struggle. My wife is fantastic. She will always, if I'm having a crap day or whatever, she will always remind me that, you know, what I'm part of is bringing something to people that, yeah, there's enjoying music, there's a fan of music, but there's always those people that it means something more to them. And you see people on the front barrier, and I'm sure Sean's had it before, that are visibly emotional, in tears and stuff, and you realize that what you're doing is helping them fulfill their dream. Like, they're able to see that artist in the flesh, they're able to live that moment, whether it's only a couple of hours of a gig and you've planned for months for it, it means the world to these people. And like standing side stage and looking out and seeing just a sea of folks, it really does. It still, you know, makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up, because you're looking at some of these people. It's mental, the amount of, you know, we can go around the world anywhere and the reaction is the same, and there's thousands and thousands of people just react in the same way. I've been fortunate enough, some of the shows that I've done with Slipknot are in countries that they've never been to before, and this is an artist that's been going for over 25 years, and to be able to say, yeah, I can't even it was in South America somewhere, one of those that where they had never been before, and it's like, and in Europe, it's places that you're like, you just assume that they've ticked every single box, and you go and you'll hear Corey say, this is the first time we've been here, and you're like, wow, okay, this is a globally known artist who has been doing it for years and years, and yet I'm here the first time they've been here as well. That's really cool. And like playing in Iowa, that was insane, because, you know, I grew up listening to Iowa and stuff, and you you're like, I'm here with Slipknot. Wow. Like, it's mental. South America in particular, the crowd, I've never seen anything like it, but you hear it, you always see it. Come to Brazil, all of this crap. But like, when you get there, the fans are verging on rabid in a good way. Like, you, the stadiums are bouncing, the flares going off in the crowd. It's just a whole different ball game to watch. And I think those are the main ones when I've been stood there and like, oh, Pantera are back. They're playing before the artist that I'm working for. This is like, what? Obviously it's a different Pantera to what we all know, but like, it's still that vibe. And you kind of sit there, scratch your head. And especially afterwards, you've the last festival, you sat there at the end with a beer after everything's loaded out, everything's finished. You're on your way back to the hotel and you're like, we did that. Let's tap yourself on the back moment, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. Genuinely, I've literally to watch To watch your progress has been fucking inspiring, exciting.
I appreciate that coming from you, mate. That's very kind of you.
I absolutely fucking love it. It's amazing. Like, and I'm saying nobody else has got the same story as you. Should write a fucking book.
Oh. I mean, do you want to? Can you do my foreword?
I will. What the fuck do you need me? You got Slipknot to do the foreword. You don't need me.
There we go. I know, right? I mean, the same goes for you two as well. Morgan may not remember. Like, I remember you, was it the Globe in Cardiff when Skindred played or something? You come and do interviews and stuff. Yeah. And obviously knowing Sean through the blackout. And again, that Skindred link, you guys are smashing it with the podcast, you know, your live show at Download this year. Is it this year?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be something. I was in Live Nation offices yesterday and there was the talk of the town. So I mentioned I was doing this and they were like, nah. So, nice. You know, congratulations to you guys as well. You're killing it with the podcast and stuff.
Thank you very much. Yeah. If Slipknot want to send us over some production for our live show, that'd be wicked.
All right. I'll see if we can find those baseball bats.
Oh, yeah. Just a random dented beer keg. And I can just... We can interview that. Okay. We can interview that on stage. That would be good.
I just want to see you come on like... We'll see.
No, just
we
walk
do,
on.
Right?
Yeah, people will have to listen to this episode and then I'll walk on Download with a dented beer keg and only people who will have listened to this will be... Why is he so fucking happy?
Have it sat in a seat in between the two of you.
And oh, yeah, 100%.
What do you think?
Yeah, never mention it. Just never mention it. Just be like, oh, got some Slipknot production in today, guys. Hey, look out. That's
That'd be amazing.
Brilliant. But yeah, thank you so much for this and for your time.
It's been a pleasure.
And yeah, good luck with fucking everything. Congratulations. Do me a favor, just pass on a congratulations from us to Slipknot, will you? Because they seem to be on fucking fire. There seems to be a new fire in them. And yeah, I can't wait for the fucking chaos later this year. So
it's definitely, I know there are a lot of plans in foot that are going to make people lose their minds. So yeah, it's the one to watch for sure.
Yes. Thank you very much to the brilliant Simon Robinson for giving us that brilliant insight into the world of Slipknot. If anyone from Slipknot is listening to this, come on a podcast. If any of the crew is listening to this and is furious that Simon might have given away some secrets, apologies. No. That was all our fault. Don't blame Simon. Please keep Simon on.
Yeah.
He's fucking great. As you know. So, yeah. No, what a fucking brilliant, open, lovely chat that was.
Yeah, I love when we get to have conversations like this because it pulls back the curtain on things we never expected, especially the life he's had from being a zookeeper to Slipknot. I mean, it's absolutely insane. No one else has got stories like that. And I love the fact that we get to just talk a little bit more without him. Do you know what? I think... I'll never watch Slipknot live again without looking at the wider production and have a think about how everything is actually put together.
Oh, don't do that. That'll be a waste of a gig for you. You'll just be looking around going, right, well, that screen had to get by there. Who's done that then? Fucking hell. Oh, they don't have the drum kit. But yes, absolutely fucking brilliant chat. Loads of things I didn't expect to hear. Who would have thought you could go from being a zookeeper... to slinging some t-shirts at the Thekla, the boat on the water in Bristol, to work for Slipknot. What?
Yeah, who would have thought? But also, it's the perfect example that it's never too late to go and chase those dreams and try different things. And if you've ever wanted a job in the music industry, just try it. Go for it. And this is what we're trying to do with Pins and Knuckles merchandise this month, is highlight these aspects, highlight different job roles and the behind-the-scenes aspects of the music community. Without people like Simon, a band like Slipknot, the show doesn't happen. And he is that example. It's never too late. If you could be in the job, you could be a zookeeper, you could be a teacher, you could be whatever you do. If you want to try and get into music, give it a go. You could be in Slipknot's crew within a few years.
That is not a guarantee. That is not a sapling guarantee.
I said could. Yeah, you got to work really hard, but still.
Yeah, yeah, you have got to work very, very hard. Listen, go back and have a listen to those fucking hours that Simon said he works. That's fucking mental. Absolutely fucking great chat with Simon. I love him to death. Thank you very much for doing it, brother. Appreciate you very, very, very much.
Yes. At the end of that conversation as well, he mentioned the fact that we're doing a live show at Downloads Festival Ooh. This summer. And he is absolutely correct.
Nice. Good. Alas. At least one fact we can verify with him. I know we worked at Bristol Zoo because I saw it
okay,
there.
Okay, that's two. That's two facts. That's two. We've two fact checked. But no, if anyone is going to download, we're going to be doing a live podcast at the new Ace of Spades stage as part of District X in the campsite on the Thursday, 13th of June. Coming, have a laugh of us. It's our third year in a row being able to do it at one of the biggest festivals in the world. I'm very, very excited. We're going to have some interesting guests to have another industry conversation. I'm just looking forward to getting back into festival season now. So download Sapnin Live June the 13th.
Yes. Also announced this week is 1,000 Lights, an event put on by Uproar from Birmingham, which is an alternative club night and mental health charity. They are doing a project called 1,000 Lights at the Birmingham Utilita Arena, where 1,000 musicians are going to come together at the venue where Chester Bennington played his last gig with Linkin Park to play some Linkin Park songs to raise money for the Uproar Mental Health Charity. So check that out. Google it. 1,000 Lights Birmingham. And I'm sure the information will come up. Check it out. Members of Funeral for a Friend, The Blackout, that's me, Holding Absence, and Casket, among many more bands are involved so far. There's more bands to be announced as well. I am trying to get Jamie from Bullet for Valentine involved as well.
Ooh.
So, but yes, check that out. 1,000 Lights, tidy, nice one. Cheers, top.
If you've enjoyed listening to this, let people know at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Put it in your stories. We'll reshare it. Just spread the love. And if you'd like to support us in any way you want to keep this going, please do check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/Sapnin. Festival season's right around the corner. You want to meet new people. You want to have a laugh with your new best friends. That is the best place to do it. If you head to the description of this and all episodes, there's loads of names there that we thank. But as always, Sean's going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sapnin Patreon podcast community, extravaganza, family, magic people.
Wow. Gathering. Magic gathering.
Magic. Oh, no, no.
Yes, as Morgan said, thank you very much to everybody who's part of our Patreon. Our Patreon community is literally the greatest thing we've ever accidentally created. And this week now, they've started up like groups within the groups for parenting advice for people, because there's a lot of parents in the groups as well. And there's like mental health chats that they sort out now and again on Saturdays. It's an absolutely fucking wonderful community. So if you like this podcast, sorry, but also check out patreon.com/Sapnin, like Morgan said. And these are the top tiers that I need to thank. Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Paul Hirschfield, Tony Michael, Scarlett Charlton, Dilly Califragilistic, XBL Grimwood, Mitch Perry, Nathan Croshaw, Molly Molloy and James Bowerbank, Amy Louise, Amy Hogg, Kat Besant, Kieran Lewis, Alexandra Pembleton, Jonathan Gutierrez, Amy Dawson, Jenny Robinson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Mayumi, Stuart McNaught, Ellen Southfield, Jennifer Dean, Caroline Robinson, Jenny Munster, Carl Pendlebury, Louis Cook, James McNaught, Jason Heredia, John and Emma, Danny Eaton, Martina McManus, Thomas O'Neill, Evan, Ollie Amesbury, Dan Peregrine, Emily Perry, Kalila Keane, Sophie Ansell, Josh, a bloke tried to attack me with his guitar. I said, is that a fret? Crisp. Thank you very much, Lavender Lee Martin, Adam King of the Goths, Parslow, Laura Russell, Vicky, Fraser Cummins, Kyle King of the Sloth Smith, and last but no means Connor Lewins and family. Thank you very much to all of those people.
Woo! We love every single one of you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for continuing to make this happen. We'll be back next Friday and every week with some special guests. And if we record the thing, we'll hopefully be recording later, then Jesus Christ, you're in for a special one next week. That's all I'm saying about that.
Yeah, fingers fucking crossed there. Let's fucking hope. this up. And but yes, thank you very much for listening. And
Sapnin.
Oh fuck.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.